Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
All right, hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Diane.
How are you?
I'm fabulous.
Do you know what today is?
It's Radiothon.
You are right. It's not hump day. It is Radiothon. Yep. Let's get the preliminaries out of the way so we can get on with this week's show. How about that?
Yep.
Okay. So once a year, we come to you, our faithful listeners, and ask you to please open your hearts and wallets and show the Outspoken Cyclist some love. And give WJCU some of that love, too. It's easy, it's almost painless, and it'll help keep independent, commercial-free, and what we believe to be a very important part of the radio and bicycling community thriving. Our theme for Radiothon this year is to thrive and survive. And the reason we gave it this theme is pretty simple. Operating costs are soaring, and we want to continue to bring you great content and great music in 2014 and beyond. WJCU is one of the finest college stations in the land, and it is our privilege to be able to produce our show in a state-of-the-art facility. However, we do this out of a commitment to the show and to you, our listeners, and we do it as volunteers. We don't get paid. Did you know that?
I knew that.
Did you see any paycheck in your mailbox?
No.
No, me neither. Isn't that weird? We do have a mailbox, you know. 100% of your donation will come to the station. None of it actually goes to the college. Please either log on to WJCU.org and click the Radiothon link, or you can call the station. It's 216-397-4438, and we will take your donation over the phone during this hour that Tim and I are here, 5:30 to 6:30 today. We will also be here next Saturday, 5:30 to 6:30, because we are one of the lucky shows that actually gets 2 days of Radiothon.
That's because we're so special.
We are special. We are so special. And so we will wrap it up next Saturday. But don't wait till next Saturday. Do it today. And we will be here to answer your calls or log on. You have all week to do it. It runs this Saturday, today, February 8th, through the following Sunday, which is actually the 16th.
Right.
Right. So we also have some nice thank you gifts beginning at the low, low price of $20 for donation. Any amount, no matter how small, is going to be most appreciated. So that's my Radiothon spiel for the moment.
And that's good. So call us so we can talk to you. We'd love to hear from you also.
Right.
Just,
yes.
We'll chat.
Well, you know, there are people who tend to call every single year, and I look forward to talking to them because I get to talk to them once a year. So very, very cool. Let's get on with this week's show. We'll get back to Radiothon at the break. We do have several guests this evening. Richard Fries is just back from the World Cyclocross Championships. I'm going to try and get this name right. Ready? Hoogerheider, the Netherlands. I think I got it right. He announced the World Championship Cyclocross races for U.S. audiences. He's going to talk to us about how the Americans fared, what we might expect from our U.S. riders in the future, and how he's working to make Providence, Rhode Island, a World Cup race in not too distant future.
I think that'd be really neat.
It is. And so they have kind of withdrawn from the Providence Cyclocross Festival for 2014 to focus on that. So we'll check in with him about that. If you're a tandem rider, or especially if you want to be a tandem rider, Mark Livingood probably has more tandem knowledge than anyone I know. His Tandem Geek blog is full of great information about bikes, components, rides, tandem tips. He's going to fill us in on a bit on all of the new tandem stuff, plus the new TCA, Tandem Club of America, website. Finally, we are going to have an encore presentation of one of the best storytellers' stories I've ever heard. Maynard Hirshon, who lives out in Colorado, is a dear friend. He wrote a story called New Wheels, which is one of my all-time favorite bicycling stories. We are having an encore presentation for this special edition of Radiothon Outspoken Cyclist. So let's head on out to Providence, Rhode Island, and talk with race announcer and promoter Richard Fries. Richard, thank you for joining us on the Outspoken Cyclist this evening. And welcome back from the World Championship Cyclocross Races. How are you?
Well, I'm great. been a little jet lagged, but not too bad.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Things are good. Yeah, good. It was very, of all the cross worlds that I've done, it was perhaps the most exciting.
Well, I do want to talk to you because your role at the Worlds is unique, and I think it's fascinating. So tell us a little bit about this year's venue.
Well, boy, in general, it's really interesting when you look at the geography of the Netherlands and Belgium, which in many ways are the same country. And people don't realize that, and the history is very interesting. Similar languages, and Hoogerheide is right over the border from Belgium. Like I went to dinner one night in Antwerp, Belgium, and Americans, especially if they live in the West, have difficulty fathoming the geographic proximity of everything. So, but that said, the venue itself was in Hoogerheide, which is a town of 9,000 people.
Oh, it's small.
Oh, it's tiny. Quaint does not. Yeah, it's that small.
So so when the people from the world showed up, how big did the town get?
It grows to 70,000.
Holy smokes. How do they support that?
It was one of the most impressive organizations I've ever worked with. Awesome. Everybody was happy. Everybody was smiling. Nobody was running. Nobody was yelling. Enormous preparation. The venue preparation started in mid-December. Some of the data is really impressive. It's effectively they take over the entrance to the town is on a road that goes out to the equivalent of our interstate, and that is the start-finish stretch. So imagine a straight road going out to the interstate in your town, and at one point there's an overpass that drops down to a park, and down in that park is the guts of the cross course, but the start-finish is up on the is on that straight access road that goes out to the interstate.
Interesting.
Right. And like most interstates or like most proper roadways, they are built up on an elevated grade. And so that elevated grade presented a lot of the drop-offs and the run-ups that you saw. So, these guys were running up these interstate, up these road grades and dropping down them. The course itself was not that sensationally difficult like the course in Namur or some of the other ones on the World Cup circuit, but it was, like anything, it was made challenging by some rain that led into it,
Okay.
which is not uncommon.
Which answers my next question, how were conditions this year?
Well, day one was rainy, and day two, it stopped raining in the afternoon on day one. But it was after, I want to say, a pretty consistent on-and-off sequence of rain. And, it was it dried fast by the time of it dried, and there was a steady wind. And fairly warm temperatures got up to about 45 each day. Hmm. And you had some sunshine, which is pretty unique for those folks. And so the course it was in flux all the time. The course was always changing, even from pre-riding to racing to within the lap to lap within a race.
That's cool, actually.
Yeah, it's not uncommon for that to happen in cross, but a lot of times people were pitting for tire changing and equipment changing, but, pressure up, pressure down. For people that are not initiated to cross, it's a mind-blowing event in terms of revealing exactly how wonderful a bicycle can be and the extreme things you can do with it while still being able to pick it up and run up a hill.
I do want to talk about equipment a little bit later because I know equipment is sort of changing and sort of not. It's still a bicycle and it still has two wheels, but there are some new things happening in equipment for cross specifically,
right?
Because it's growing so fast. So I want to talk a little bit about you for a moment, because you've announced not just cross, you've announced across the disciplines of cycling.
Yeah.
So how is cross different from, saying, announcing a road race? And were you not the only one there announcing, right?
Correct. When I announced at the World, it's interesting because in some ways it's a little bit less interesting to me because I'm announcing to a television monitor and I'm watching what the television is showing because those televisions are showing what's going on the Jumbotron.
Interesting.
So I'm always working with the announcer in the local language. So in this instance, it was Dutch. It was a gentleman named Kees Maas, and he's been announcing since the 70s. He is also the announcer. He's done Tour de France stages. He's done Road World Championships, where I met him in Limburg two summers ago. He's really well known for his announcing at six-day races on the Velodrome. He is the Amstel Gold Race, the Aniko Tour, all of the great Dutch things he has been the voice of for a long time. Very nice gentleman, and very, like most of my European counterparts, it's an encyclopedic knowledge they have, much like our American baseball reporters.
Interesting. That, yeah.
They're like, they are so funny, because when I get to Italy in Tuscany to do the Road Worlds, they sit down and I'm in a room with 17 people and they go, okay, Mr. Richard, tell us what we need to do. And I'm looking down the table and every one of these guys has forgotten more stuff than I will ever know about cycling.
And they're so asking you, okay, Mr. Richard, yeah, what should we do?
Right.
That's funny.
So, and some of it has to do with what I do, and it's a little bit unique. But
so, what is that? What is that?
Well, it's and this has sort of been how I've been lucky, I guess. You know, it's really interesting. I want to say maybe 15 years ago when I started to get some notoriety, people said that I had created, it was me and actually a good colleague of mine, Chris Zygmunt, who's now the global marketing director at SRAM, that we created what's called the new school of announcing, which was you get out of a booth, you get off the stage, you go with wireless microphones, you are using radio earpieces to one another, and you work very closely with the overall production, namely how you work with music. And a lot of this came from my background in covering as a journalist rock and roll, which I love. And I still to this day go to a lot of concerts and clubs. I have an older son who's he's my favorite DJ to work with. But, you know, it's a matter of sometimes I have to turn to my counterparts who are coming from a traditional sports commentating background, and I have to look at them and tell them, you never talk when Mick Jagger is leading into a song. You know, like, what are you doing, you know?
Yeah, really. Hello.
Yeah. This is Street Fighting Man. You don't talk now, okay? But it's you know, that's one of the elements is that, you know, music is not played. It is selected. And I really struggle to even impart that in Europe still because I'm trying to be very respectful of what, you know, what am I supposed to say? If we're thrilled if we have 15,000 people, they have 50,000 people.
Right, right.
So what the hell do I know?
Yeah, well, that's true. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Richard Fries. He is fresh back from the World Championship Cyclocross Races it's Hoogerheide?
Hoogerheide, yeah.
Hoogerheide, Netherlands. Let's talk a little bit about this year's events. How did the Americans do, which is how our Americans did?
It was... I can only put it in the words of a preschooler. It was a poopy doopy weekend.
but nice. It's,
you really can't, you know. It's really fascinating. You know, we've had editions of the World Championships where we've won three silver medals. You know, we sort of we should be seeing some of our best riders consistently pressing into the top 10 and. And that was not the case. The closest we had was Katie Compton, and she rode way below her expectations due to primarily an asthma outbreak.
Yeah.
You know, people like to say, yeah, well, she got crashed out. And even Katie would agree with me. In the 300 meters from the start line to the finish truss where the electronic timing clicked, she went under that finish truss in 14th place.
Wow.
And she was the first call up. She shouldn't have been in that space.
No, but as you said, she was sick. Would she have been, and this is, you know, this is all speculation after the fact. Would she have been better off just pulling herself from the event and getting well?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, it was, you know, she's paid to race. She is a racer.
That's true. That's true.
She took the start in Tabor, Czech Republic, where knowing that she was going to have the recurrence of her leg cramps. You know, and I don't know what to say. The one thing is that the the World Championships is the brightest of bright lights and the biggest of stages. And given the intensity of it and the proximity of the spectators, and this may shock some of your riders who are maybe relatively new to cycling, coming, you know, from the charity ride portal, or they love the Tour de France. In many ways, the Crossworlds is the biggest stage in all of cycling, meaning if you race in the Tour, you go off into the countryside and you're left to your own, and you're just not ever under that much scrutiny and pressure. And the other thing is that the start of a cross race is, we don't just roll off the line. It is a thundering herd. It makes Ben Hur look like a training race. Just the degree of it is impressive. So the Americans, we were seriously disappointed by Peter Gogan, the junior, who was in a perfect position and got around a massive crash that took down about 25 riders at the start of the junior race. He got around that and broke his chain.
Oh, jeez.
You know, and then got a new bike and flatted, and just had everything that could go wrong went wrong.
Yeah, mechanical.
Yeah.
How did Jonathan Page do?
Jonathan Page didn't have the greatest starts, but he steadily improved, and he closed to be our highest-placed American, I want to say, in 19th.
So we had a tough Worlds.
Jeremy Powers advanced up to 12th place at one point, then a crash. But this is the thing. When your listeners are hearing this, in cyclocross, you say, well, they had a mechanical or they had a crash. That's part of the sport. And there's a reason Sven Nys doesn't have those mechanicals and doesn't have those crashes. It is a game of mistakes, and when you are at that stage, you are pushed so close to making mistakes and breaking equipment, and it is the fine art of riding a bike, taken to the highest level. These are the greatest cyclists alive, in my opinion, in terms of the spectrum of their skills and abilities. You know, and if I go on a road ride, I'm like looking at you going, what are you doing? And you're looking at me like you don't know what I'm looking at. And I go, you're going to have a flat tire. And a mile later, you know, I can see you had a flat tire. Well, because I saw exactly what you were doing.
Right.
And that's mysterious to the average charity rider who's just starting out, you know?
Right.
Who's over there riding in the broken glass and the debris.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Who do you see coming up for cross riders in the U.S.?
Peter Gogan's the real deal.
Okay.
That broke his chain. We'll see how he responds coming out of the junior ranks, which is when we lose a lot of our best riders. It's very interesting. If you read the list, the roster of junior world champions, you realize only about half of those names go on to be big names in the pro ranks. But if you read the list of the podium finishers in the under 23 division, like 90% of those riders who fare well go on to superstar careers in the elite ranks. So in the U.S., the ones that I look at, I think Peter Gogan's the real deal. I think Austin Vincent. I think all four of the juniors that represented us, Cooper Wilsey, Peter Gogan, Austin Vincent, and Max Chance out of Colorado, all have the wherewithal to go top 10 at the next level. In the under 23 division, we have some fantastic riders. I think Logan Owen is going to be a top 10 elite rider within a few years. Again, it's these guys are learning how to ride better and better at the highest levels. And all the under 23 riders are great. I think Curtis White's great. Our women's field, Katie Antineau, and I'm assuming that we are talking about the generation after Katie Compton.
I am, yeah, up and comers, the new generation.
Katie Antineau is at the head of that class, there is a young lady out of New York by the name of Emma White. Her brother Curtis White is on the national team. But Emma White is 16, and I was really impressed. There was a Dutch girl that raced in the World Championships who was 16, and she was local. But Emma White could have raced at that level, and she is just turned 16 in the United States and has won UCI races over here. She has beaten some really big names, which is impressive. So I think Emma White is the America's Marianne Vos. She's
nice.
That good.
Nice.
Probably the most impressive rider I've seen in a long time.
That is awesome.
So, yeah, and then in the women's division, we have some, you know, Elle Anderson, I think, is going to be a top 10 rider coming up as well. So, don't know what to tell you in the elite men. So, we're about to go through a big changeover.
Okay.
Roster.
We'll watch and see. So this is a question that hadn't occurred to me till right now, but you might have a unique perspective on it. You know, when this show airs, Sochi will have opened and we have another Olympics. And there's been a lot of talk about how our athletes are sponsored and sent to these championships. So how were these people who showed up at Worlds able to get there, to have equipment, to have crews, to have everything? Obviously, it must be through sponsorship. But how about an Emma White? Who is supporting her in coming up into the ranks?
An Emma White has been signed by, you know, Cannondale Cyclocross World, and they support their athletes. So it's really a curious thing. I'll give you some data that somebody just told me. And it should probably be checked, but the USA Cycling spends $200,000 on its mountain bike program. And because the growth and the ROI has been so much better in cyclocross, they have spent $400,000 on cyclocross.
Okay.
And that goes all across the board to a lot of things.
It's not a lot of money in the scheme of things, really.
Well, yeah, let me give you, by perspective, you know, then USA Cycling has invested $600,000 in road racing.
Okay.
By comparison, Great Britain Cycling Federation has invested $40 million.
There you have it, right there. That answers my question. I mean, that shows that shows people, you know, all the money goes into football, all the money goes into basketball, baseball, all these sports. And here's cycling, which really is so inclusive. It allows so many people to be involved who don't have to be at that level and could get to that level, perhaps, and there's no real support for it. It's very disconcerting to me at times.
Well, it's very disconcerting to me, too, that the average sports journalist doesn't have a clue about doping and doesn't realize that if people were aware of the amount of performance-enhancing drugs going on with kids that are in high school.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't test, and there is no testing of athletes, and they don't want that. And quite frankly, from a marketing perspective, cycling has been destroyed by its efforts, whether they were right, wrong, twisted, manipulated, and all of those things are true. But cycling has, you know, has really paid a dear price for our doping scandals.
All right, last thing I want to talk about is Providence. You've made some changes for 2014. You are making a bid for something. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's actually we're going to bid after 2014.
Right.
We're using 2014 as a platform to generate sponsorship, work on our television production, and we will submit a bid next year after our audition to become a World Cup. Which is, and I spent a lot of time talking in the Netherlands to UCI officials, and I am also working very closely with Brooke Watts, who's the promoter of the Cross Vegas event.
Oh, yeah, nice.
We want to work hand in hand. He may become a World Cup as well, but we are not letting them rush us until we're ready. Some people feel that I can promote a World Cup for a budget of $200,000. I've put the number in closer to $700,000.
Okay.
The key thing is that we have to coordinate this with the riders and the, you know, all of the elements that have to go into it and also the other promoters. So we want to create, this really does get exciting, and the Europeans are interested in, especially the Bpost Bank Trophy, which is one of the premier series in the lowlands, as well as the Super Prestige series. But we are looking to create an American month, which is September and possibly into the first weekend of October with Providence. We have to juggle the calendar a little bit, but the idea is that if we're going to get Sven Nice and all these superstars over here, we're going to have to give them enough racing and enough reason to be here. But it seems like we have the Europeans listening, and the riders do want to come.
So what's happening for Providence for 2014? You've actually kind of pulled out of that week.
Yeah, well, I'm still out the first weekend of October, but I'm still partnered with Gloucester from a promotional standpoint. It still will be the Holy Week of Cyclocross
Okay.
with Gloucester and Providence. we need to talk about some, whether or not how the thing will work. If we become a World Cup, do we need to be put on a different date? The other thing is that we have withdrawn from the Shimano series, largely because if we do a World Cup, we would not be able to stay in the alignment of their offerings, of their race day schedule.
Got it.
That's pretty exciting stuff, Richard.
Yeah, well.
It's exhausting, too. Well, I just have one comment about the funding, which you know, that it always comes down to, you know, doing it right. And to me, if you're going to have a budget, better come in, you know, over on time and under budget than not have enough money to produce it. So, you know, why wouldn't you go for the whole enchilada and get it right than to piece it together? That's the way I always look at that stuff.
And that issue is we're going to have to charge a gate for people to come in and see these riders. We have a lot of ideas to do that. We also will still offer, no matter what, we will offer a weekend full of amateur racing. We will still have this amazing Holy Week of New England. We're pretty excited. But to get to where they are in Europe, where we can't get there in one day or in one season, but to give you a sense of how big this is, you know, the largest beer tent at Hoogerheide held 5,000 people, and the smallest one held 3,000.
Wow, those are huge.
There were seven of them.
Wow.
So that gives you a sense. Now, that's Hoogerheide. If you look at, if you want to look at Nome, if you want to look at Rome, the other World Cups, they're not nearly that. Providence is already bigger than Nome. So we have to look at it that way, too. So we're well on our way. We're going to have some exciting things to, we're going to be talking next year, and we'll have American Cyclocross on a very good footing.
And I'll be there to hear what you have to say. Well, I thank you so much for talking to me. I hope you're rested up after your world travels. What's next for you right now, other than getting out of the snow?
Yeah, I'm really happy to report that I took my name tag off around the house. My children are remembering who I am.
Your sticky name tag.
I'm going to start riding my bike a lot more. And we're getting ready for Tim Johnson's ride on Chicago, getting ready for the National Bike Summit.
Yeah, I was going to say, is he going down to the summit? Are you going to join him for that?
Yeah, we're both trying to go down there. And I'm getting ready for a pretty busy spring, Sea Otter. I'll probably be at the Tour of California this year, which is new and for me. And, you know, really just working really, really, really hard. I'm working harder on cyclocross right now than my staff does in September. If that makes sense. So
yeah,
really,
it does. It does.
Working hard.
I hope to see you at the Bike Summit, and have a good trip down. Have a great rest of your winter. Yuck, yuck. It's just so awful here in Northeast Ohio right now. But it's good to talk with you.
Excellent. Always like it. Keep it up. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Richard. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. All righty. We are going to take a short break on The Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be right back. And it's Radiothon.
It's WJCU Radiothon 2014.
WJCU provides commercial-free content 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No subscriptions, no spam, no spin.
Call now or pledge online. We need your support.
Learn more at WJCU.org.
WJCU, University Heights.
I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist, and we're going to bust your chops about Radiothon again one more time. So the phone number, if you would like to call and talk with one of us, is 216-397-4438. That's our request line, which the request is, we're making the request, that you pull out your credit card and make a donation to WJCU during Radiothon. Thrive and Survive is our theme. And our costs are going up, just like everybody else. We don't get all of our funding from the college, and none of the money that we bring in for Radiothon goes back to the college. So we get to keep it all. And that's how we are in a state-of-the-art studio, and it gives us the privilege of bringing you The Outspoken Cyclist every week. So you can log on WJCU.org and click the Radiothon button, or once again, call 216-397-4438. So let's do a little bit of news. What do you say, dude?
Yep, absolutely. We got lots of stuff. We'll keep it short this week, though.
We will. So the first item I have is from Momentum Magazine. And I think it's kind of cool. More than 2,000 letters and cards have been sent to the White House, and thousands more tweets and retweets have been circulating the Twitter sphere, requesting that the First Lady, Michelle Obama, along with her daughters, Malia and Sasha, attend the Youth Bike Summit in New York City. That summit is hosted by the nonprofit organization Recycle a Bicycle and Parsons the New School for Design in an annual 3-day national conference exploring how the bicycle is a catalyst for positive social change among youth, hoping that the Obama's voices can assist in making the nation a safer and healthier place for youth to ride a bicycle. Children and supporters alike, including Congresswoman Nydia Velasquez from the 7th District of New York, wrote personal letters to the First Lady requesting her attendance at the Youth Bike Summit. It takes place next weekend, February 14th through 16th. I don't know if she's going, but I think it would be really cool if she did.
I think it would be a great way to support the health of the youth of the country.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she's into healthy kids.
Right.
So, you know, cycling's one of those things. All right, what you got?
Well, we're going to go to the other end of the age spectrum. Frenchman Robert Marchand broke his own hour record, and he received a contract from World Tour squad Cofidis. Robert is 102 years old, and
yes,
we talked about him on a show a couple weeks ago. And from Cofidis, the statement is, "It's no secret that our riders have not impressed in the last few seasons. They need inspiration, motivation to ride faster every year, and Marchand is the ultimate proof that it can be done. He's faster at 102 than he was at 100. His quote was, "I want to see a Frenchman win the Tour de France before I die, so I must work quickly."
Well, I don't know. He looks like he's going to outlive us all.
I think he's got a couple of years to go, but I think that's a neat story.
That is a great story. Well, we did speak with Richard Fries, you will remember, at the beginning of the show. It wasn't that long ago, just a few minutes ago. And we talked about Katie Compton, who did not do well at the show, and there is, or at the World Cross National Cross World Championships. And there is an excellent article from Velo News titled "Betrayal: Katie Compton's Body Lets Her Down in the Crunch," and it sort of details what happened to her. And she was pretty sick. She's an asthmatic. So if you're interested in hearing more or reading more about what happened with Katie, who, you know, Marion Vos, who is the world champion, Katie can beat her, but not this time. It just didn't seem to be in the cards. So it's Velo News competitor "Betrayal: Katie Compton's Body Lets Her Down in the Crunch."
I think that's a shame. There's so many times that we always tell people that your passion and your drive, and just convince yourself your will to win will work. But in a case like this, when your lungs aren't doing what they're supposed to, it doesn't matter. The old Jens Voigt, "shut up lungs," wouldn't work.
No, not in this
just
case.
Just not going to fix it.
Right, exactly. This is an interesting news item about Paul Kimmage and the defense fund that suddenly disappeared, and now he needs it. Verbruggen and McQuaid reactivate legal case against Kimmage is from Velo Nation from February 7th. It is by Shane Stokes, and it reads, "Although Brian Cookson said in October that the UCI was abandoning the legal case it had previously taken against Paul Kimmage, two other parties in that suit, former presidents Hein Verbruggen and Pat McQuaid, have reactivated their related action against the Irish journalist. In October of 2012, McQuaid spoke after the publication of the USADA report and said then that the action was suspended. Cookson's statement 1 year later appeared to signal the final conclusion of the legal case. However, Verbruggen and McQuaid, who will both have their presidencies investigated and assessed by the new Cycling Independent Reform Commission, have decided otherwise. The UCI has been ordered to pay Kimmage 500 Swiss francs in cost and must itself pay 700 euro in legal fees." So there is a lot more to this. And the other end of it is the fact that the fund for Paul Kimmage, the defense fund that was set up for him by Cyclismus, and by Leslie Cohen, has disappeared. And there is a lawsuit, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. There's going to be a lot more going on in the next couple of weeks, and we will be catching up with Leslie Cohen to talk about it. So on to the next item.
Last bit of news is local. Cleveland received $10,000 to develop a mountain bike park. For those of you that know the Cleveland area, it's over by 480 and Lee is where it's going to be. And they've been selected to develop this facility as part of the IMBA Bike Park Initiative.
IMBA.
So anytime I think that we can see more opportunities for any type of biking, we're good.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, we have the Velodrome now. And we are looking at a lot of bicycle-related projects and a mountain bike park. We have Ray's indoor park, so
right.
This would be the outside park.
I hope somewhere in there there's also a way that we can get to and from the park.
That would be nice.
With all the trails and everything else that we're adding,
right.
I hope that that's in the loop.
Things
so
that
speak,
actually
that.
Meet up with one another, yes,
right.
that's always a consideration. All right, one more shot at it, Radiothon. We are here to answer your questions and to take your pledges. 216-397-4438, WJCU.org. Pledge now is as good a time as any to pull out that credit card. All right, we don't have a whole lot of time. We're going to buzz on down to the Atlanta area, and we're going to talk with Mark Livingood about tandems. Mark, thank you for joining me on the show this evening. How are you?
I'm fine, Diane. Glad to be back.
Yeah, and how is the Atlanta area? Are you under any storm watches right now?
Actually, we are. Again, we've got falling temperatures and some precipitation tonight, so we won't have snow, but we'll probably have black ice tomorrow morning.
Oh, that's ugly. That's ugly. Not good for riding.
Not at all.
Yeah. So I wanted to check in with you because if anybody wants to know anything about tandems, you're the guy. You are definitely the guy. We did report that there was a new TCA, Tandem Club of America, website. You have a kind of an interesting perspective on it, and you know the whole story behind it. Tell us a little bit about the background of the TCA, how it was founded, and who those people were.
Sure. TCA, the Tandem Club of America, was founded back in 1976 by Malcolm Boyd and his wife, Judy Allison. They had a goal of connecting tandem cyclists across North America. And back at the time, like a lot of bicycle clubs, what they came up with was a modest fee-based membership model to support the publication and bulk mailing of a bi-monthly newsletter called Double Talk. That was the social media of the day, if you will. Double Talk had the rally calendars, regional club contacts, classified ads, things that, you know, folks who tandem cycled needed to know so that they could come together for rallies and share information. Again, I think they followed some models that maybe American Bicycling, League of American Bicyclists had used and things like that. So that was kind of that's always been the stalwart method of communication for the club. In the 90s, they stood up a website to augment the newsletter, but not really to replace it. So they had the event calendars, classified ads, and some samplings of articles online, but they really didn't do much to engage the technology of the time. So it really became, just kind of a place to go to see the same things you would find in the magazine. Fast forward to this summer, Jack and Susan Gertz, who served as the leaders of the TCA and editors of Double Talk since 1983, when they took it over from Malcolm, finally decided it was time for them to pass the torch. Give up the editing, they want to become the treasurers and take a different kind of a role in the club. Malcolm Boyd came right back into it, along with Laura McCabe, who's TCA's membership director, and a couple other folks from the TCA, and talked about what the future of the TCA was and what it might look like. I suggested a survey, so we surveyed the membership to find out what their sense of the club was. Got some modest feedback, and recently they pretty much overhauled the entire club. And one of the things that came out of that overhaul was a new web presence, which is the new TCA website you mentioned before. And also a new business model for the club. Gone are the dues, which were modest. I think they ended up being $15 a year. But with no more bulk mailing of newsletters, the last TCA Double Talk issue mailed out in December, we're now going paperless. That's goodness. We'll see where it goes. The new site will let people submit articles online with color photos, interact with the calendar, submit their calendar updates, you know, paperless, classified ads or paperless, again, try to evolve it into something a little bit more than it used to be. So, well, we'll see what happens. Again, I'm anxious to see how it plays out. It'll let me sunset a lot of my own website, which has been kind of a bridge since some other websites that were out there back in the 90s went away.
Well,
so it's
exciting
times.
It is exciting times. My concern, of course, although TCA has been able to hold it together for years, but clubs form and people come and go. And, you know, some of this stuff tends to sort of disintegrate and crumble. But it seems like people can go to the TCA website and find out about bikes that are for sale. For example, there's a huge used tandem market. I know that people who just want to get into tandeming oftentimes only want to try a used bike. You can also ask lots of questions. So it's pretty exciting that you'll have this kind of interactive website now and the blog site. But along with that, there's your blog, which is overstuffed with stuff. So talk to us about Tandem Geek and what made you do that and then how you keep up with it. And we want to talk about your new toy, your new your GoPro, which it seems to be doing really well.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, again, I mentioned in our last interview, I started a website back around 2000 to serve as a bridge for Tandem information again. TCA's website really never came up to be what it could have been, and the Tandem and Family Cycling Magazine website went dormant. So I bridged that with some information. For years, I'd post notices, but it was a pretty tough way of posting information, having to host it up on a website. So I finally came on with the blog around 2010, I guess, 2011, and it just became a way of not only talking about what's going on with news and Tandem cycling, but it became a good outlet for me, almost like a daily journal, if you will, of here's the average life of a guy who's really obsessed with tandem bicycles. So it talks about technical things that come to my mind. We share our rally stories, things like that. It's just an out for me. I enjoy writing. It's my therapy at night. So apparently I need a lot of therapy.
We all need therapy. That's why a lot of people ride bikes. That is therapy in a way. So tell us a little bit about your GoPro, what you're using it for. I mean, some people are using it to sort of document their rides each day. How are you using it?
Well, the one thing that I've always thought would be neat with the GoPro, being a tandem geek, was to actually hook it on the bike to look at how certain things are acting. For instance, I'd like to know how much fork flex there is up on front on some of the composite forks. With a GoPro, I'm pretty sure you can mount it in such a way that it can look down the fork and detect if you have any deflection. Is it, you know, fore aft? How much is it? Same thing with frame flex. People talk about the boom tube bowing all the time and being a source of loss of energy. And, you know, I don't know. I think there's some pixie dust in there. But it's going to be interesting to take the camera, mount it alongside the frame so it's shooting the length of the frame down those tubes to see just how much dynamic, you know, side-to-side movement you don't want that really is in some of the different bikes that we ride. Things like that. And then, of course, obviously capturing images as you ride in a way that you really can't with a still camera. We've played around with it a little bit and had some fun. And, I'm not one who wants to go put a 5-minute, 10-minute video of, you know, riding along the road out there. So I'm playing around with doing some editing to cut it down to 30 clips in a minute, things like that.
So what are you using to edit? What is the software?
The GoPro actually has its own software. It's called Cineform, or Cineform, probably. I haven't looked at the phonetic spelling with the details to it. But it's a product that's on the website. If you have a GoPro camera, you can use it. If you have any kind of movies, you can use it to edit. It doesn't care what it is. It's not intuitive, but there's a couple of really good videos out on the web. GoPro Tips, I think, is the name of a guy out of Canada who posts a whole bunch of videos. He had about 5 videos in a row that take you to the steps of fire up the software. Here's how you move your movies to it. Here's how you take clips out of it. Now here's how you edit it back and forth. Sitting down with that for 20 minutes, I was able to start editing right away. So it was great.
That's cool. I want to move on to something that I get a lot of questions about this, or I used to when I was in retail, which is now in my rearview mirror, which I like. What do you think about the tandem market? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Or is it staying the same?
That's a tough one.
I know. That's why I'm asking you.
Ridership, it's so regionally diverse. If you talk to somebody who's in Sacramento, California, they'll have a different view of what the tandem scene is versus somebody who's in northern New Jersey. I think where it benefits is where you have a pretty good concentration of tandem cyclists who get together and ride as a club and get to the rallies. That helps it. So that can, from my perspective, skew my view of how active the community is. But just kind of, you know, participating in different forms of stuff, I generally say the market's probably steady. It's had a couple of pockets of growth and some niche areas within the niche area of tandem cycling. Off-road tandems, which people don't probably realize exist out there. Is an area where there's been a lot of growth. people are getting tired of the roads and hassling with motorists. So they're taking to gravel trails and whatnot on 29ers and 26-inch off-road and enduro tandems to get their cycling in the same way that mountain bikers get it in, except doing it with two people on the bike. Then the other interesting one is the high-end tandems. I'm amazed at the amount of money folks are putting into some of these really exotic high-end Calces, and the Santana high-end Beyond is its most popular bike. And these are $12,000-$13,000 bikes easily. So that's an interesting market where the baby boomers have really come on strong and continue to support the real core of what I see in tandeming.
Being a tandem rider myself, you know, and we've been on a whole bunch of different bikes. It is very interesting to watch the tandem teams and what their direction is in terms of those who want to just start out with an inexpensive tandem and those who just say, never mind, we know we love this. We're just going to invest in the one that fits and rides the way we want it to. Yeah, it is a huge, huge difference. I also would like to know if you think events help to grow the tandem market, and which events do you think will be the big tandem rally events this year? Or is it tandem rallies only? Or are there things like Ragbri and things like, you know, some of the other big rides that attract tandem riders?
Well, I think the regional rides, the non-tandem events, are key, because that's where people get out on tandems. They see another team that rides a tandem, and it's that networking that says, hey, did you know there's such a thing as a tandem rally? When we started tandem cycling, we had no idea there were rallies,
right,
or tours, or anything else. So I think it's important that, you know, again, I think the logical progression is you have someone who's a cyclist. They decide they want to cycle with a child or their spouse or a disabled cyclist or something like that, and they start riding alone, and then they go to an event, and then they meet other tandem cyclists, and it grows from there. And then, you know, again, if they like socializing with other people, the key is having a good tandem club where you get, you know, five or six couples that get out and ride once a month, maybe as many as 15 in a very active club. And then the tandem rallies are just like any other kind of a good bicycle rally, a weekend of just immersing yourself in other people who have a shared love of cycling, but very diverse backgrounds. Oh, it's amazing the people you meet. And you got CEOs and then people who own their own businesses and then people who are blue-collar guys that just want a weekend away to go cycle with the family. It's great.
It is great. You know, I've only been to one tandem rally. That was the Dayton Tandem Rally, which was pretty much almost, well, it was, I guess, Midwest. And it pretty much rained all during
it
the
did.
Whole thing.
We were there with you.
That's right. Oh, you were there. That's right. It was just amazing. It was amazing. Right. So the last thing I want to talk about is how people can find out more about tandems and your blog. Can you give us those URLs for folks?
Sure. The Tandem Club of America, its URL is tandemclub.org.
Okay, that's easy enough.
That's easy enough. My blog is easier to find just by doing a search on the Tandem Geeks blog.
Okay.
No matter how you type it in, it will find it. It's the only one out there.
And it is really, truly, you do a lot of very interesting things. You do a lot of reviews, and you spend a lot of time on it. I have to say, for somebody who has a full-time job, you seem to put a lot of effort into the Tandem Geek blog, and your synopses are really good. So can people subscribe to that?
They can.
Okay.
At least the Tandem Geeks blog.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get the folks at the TCA tech side to make sure they figure out how to get the TCA website where you can subscribe to that blog.
I think that's a good idea. Well, I wish you a lot of tandem luck this year. I hope you and Deb are going to get lots of miles in. You have a goal? Do you put up a goal each year for a number of miles? Is that what you do?
We try to get somewhere around, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 miles a year on.
That's
on
awesome. All right. So. Well, enjoy, and we'll talk again. And thank you so much for talking with me on the show this evening.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much, Diane.
All right. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Mark Livinggood joined me from his home in Atlanta, Georgia, where it's cold, but not as cold as here. Always an interesting conversation. He knows more about tandems. He's probably forgotten more about tandems than I'll ever know. So as I promised, we are going to hear the story, New Wheels, from our friend Maynard Hirshon. But I want to remind you one more time that this is Radiothon Week. And while you're listening to this wonderful story from Maynard, why don't you get your credit card out and give us a call at 216-397-4438 or log on to WJCU.org and make your pledge for Radiothon. Let's hear from Maynard Hirshon.
Thanks, Diane. This is called Nice Wheels. Bob turned the sign to closed and clicked off the outside light. He went back to the bench and the stand and the half-trued wheel. Last one out of there as usual, he thought, turning the wheel a quarter turn each way, not yet touching it with the tool. He liked working after closing without noise or distractions or people waiting for their stuff. He liked knowing he could think about whatever he wanted to and could take his time with the work, no clock ticking. He heard tapping at the door, saw it was Eric, and motioned him to come in. Not locked, he mouthed, nodding and making door-opening movements. Eric came in looking puzzled. He had a Campin' YOLO box tucked under his arm. Hubs, maybe. I was rooting around in the dumpster for an old rim to stretch a saw up on. And look what I found, Eric said. And handed Bob a Chorus hub set. 9-speed. 32H scrawled on the top in black marker. Bob's writing. And one of Bob's price tags stuck on the end. Eric shook his head, wearily waved goodnight, and left. Unwilling to believe what he saw, Bob stared at the box. He looked up at the shelf where the hubs should have been, and by golly, they weren't there. No. Until a moment ago, they were in the dumpster. Only someone working for me would leave this box in the dumpster after sneaking it out of the store. Anyone else would have taken these hubs right home. An employee might leave them out there, then come back after closing, after midnight maybe, and grab them when no one would see. If someone found them out there, it could be an accident. Why, they must have fallen into the wastebasket by mistake and ended up in the dumpster with the rest of the junk. Sure, lucky you found them. Geez, Bob said out loud, someone's taken stuff from the shop. Whoever did this wouldn't leave that box out there longer than they had to, he thought. Must have been someone who worked today. Imagining one of his guys stealing, having to play detective and figure out who it was, made Bob tired. I don't want to do this, he thought. I sell the guy's stuff 10% over cost. If they can't pay now, they pay little by little out of their checks. If they need to borrow something of mine, they know they just have to ask. If they need my help, whatever it is, they just have to ask. Especially if they're riding their bikes a lot, riding every day or training and racing. I'll do about anything to help. Still, here was serious evidence that one of his guys was stealing. Bob opened the box and took out the rear hub. He turned the axle and felt the grease-slowed smoothness of the bearings, spun the cassette body, and listened to the Paul's ratchet inside. He pulled his Sutherland's manual down from the shelf above the bench and leafed through it, found the pages he wanted, and did some arithmetic in pencil inside the lid of the Campy box. He bent down to boxes under the bench and counted out leaded stainless spokes in three links. Dunked the threaded ends into a bottle of spoke prep. He tamped the wet ends on a rag and spread the spokes out on the bench to dry. He scooped a handful of spoke nipples out of another box. Found two 32-hole Mavic Aero clincher rims and unwrapped them, laying them gently on the bench. He laced spokes onto both of the Campy hubs, threaded the spokes into the holes in the rims, and screwed on the nipples a few turns. Once, while he was mindlessly starting nipples onto spokes, he found himself wondering who the hell had taken the hubs. He made himself stop thinking like that. Stop, Bob! And went on building the wheels. He took the customer's wheel out of the stand and hung it on a hook. He chucked the newly laced front wheel into the stand and took his time making it fine, tight, and true. He took it out of the stand and squeezed the spokes together. He put the wheel on the floor to stress it out, then put it back in the stand and touched it up. Just right. He got a Velox cotton rim strip and a Phillips screwdriver. He put the Phillips through the valve hole in a tape and the valve hole in the rim, then stretched the tape around the rim, tight and straight. He dusted the rim strip with talc, found two lightweight tubes and two light folding road clinchers. He sprinkled talc on the tube, put one of the tubes and one of the tires on the rim. He put in 40 pounds with a floor pump, checked the bead, and ran it up to 100. He built the rear wheel in the same methodical way, installed the other rim strip, tube, and tire, and put in 110 pounds per square inch. He found a 1223 Campy cog set, lightly greased the cassette body, slipped the cogs and spacers on, and tightened the lock nut. Nice wheels, he said. And they were nice wheels. He chucked the customer wheel back in the stand so he'd remember to work on it first thing. He turned off the fluorescence above the shop and rechecked that the back door was locked. He got his jacket and tidied up the bench, turned out lights, turned on other lights, walked to the front door and set the alarm. Carrying the fine new wheels out with him, he turned to lock the door within the seconds the alarm allowed. He peered through the glass, past the Power Bar sticker and the Oakley sticker and the GT sticker, and saw that all was just as it should be. As he passed the dumpster on the way to his old truck, he lifted the lid and gently put the wheels inside. As he lowered the lid, glare from a streetlight glinted off one of the hubs. Nice wheels, he thought. And they were nice wheels.
Maynard Hirshon's story, New Wheels, is one of my all-time favorites, and I hope you enjoyed our rebroadcast of it. That's our show for this week. One more time, it is Radiothon. Tim and I are here in the studio for another few minutes, 216-397-4438. Log on to WJCU.org, and we hope to hear from you. We'll be back next week with another really good show and another Radiothon opportunity. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.